this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, of course, this evening, they're going to be your views as well, because we're going to have open line Wednesday, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And if you have a subject you'd like to talk about, why, you give us a call. Otherwise, I thought maybe I'd go back and reminisce about, well, no, we've got Vicky calling, and where's Vicky calling from? She's calling from, I guess it's Minnesota. So anyway, let's go to Vicky. Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Good, thank you.
You're in Minneapolis, Minnesota?
Yes.
All right, fine. It's good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a medical question. I just wanted your perspective or how you think we should approach this. I have a 6.5-year-old who appears to have shingles, and he's been having a lot of pain with it, which I understand to be part of the symptoms. And his doctor referred him to a dermatologist. The dermatologist, just to be sure, did a biopsy. And then was talking about doing the antiviral drugs. But his resident doctor thought it was just too late because it's been like 4 or 5 days now. And so I'm just wondering, how do we determine, like, who would be like the expert that we should rely on their opinion as far as starting antiviral drugs or not?
Well, Sydney, first of all, 6.5 years old, shingles is a disease you used to get for older people, and it's related to the chickenpox virus, but you usually don't see it in somebody at 6.5 years of age. Is there a sort of line of blisters around the chest, or where?
It's actually like starting from his lower back, like on his like left butt cheek, all the way down his left leg.
All right, fine, but is it in front and back, or just on the side, or where is it on the leg?
Pretty much all around the leg.
Well, you just wonder, this is not typical of shingles, because shingles usually follows the path of one nerve root. And they tell you it's shingles, or they tell you it's chicken pox, or what do they tell you?
They felt pretty, and he's seen a few doctors now, because they've all kind of, I brought him in, they wanted to have another colleague do an opinion. They're pretty confident, but they also did a biopsy today just to make sure.
So what did they find with the biopsy?
We won't have the results for a couple of days.
All right, fine. Well, I see there's nothing wrong with trying antiviral drugs if they know what the virus is, Sydney, but Sydney, you would want to do everything you can, independent of that, to try to build up your child's immunity, and that would be, well, things like oil of oregano, Sydney, you can get that at the health food store, and Sydney, garlic or garlic extracts. These things do traditionally help to raise the immunity, and certainly go ahead and use the viral drugs if this is what the doctors say, but do things on your own to try to increase the immunity as well.
Okay, so I just ask your opinion, because I wasn't sure. Because one doctor's telling me it's too late to start them, and one's suggesting I do start them. That's why I was trying to figure out, how do I decide?
Well, I would certainly go ahead. I'd rather try, and even if they didn't do any good, it might do some good, and you want to do everything you can to abort this. Certainly,
okay.
You want to get it going as soon as you can, but there's nothing wrong with having these olive leaf extracts, oil of oregano, certainly the garlic compounds. We actually carry something called Alibiotic, but it's just a combination of all these things. But try to build up your child's immunity, because certainly this is a very unusual case of shingles. If it's shingles, I've never seen anything like it in my profession. But remember, I was an orthopedist. I wasn't a dermatologist or pediatrician.
Yeah. Can you ask me, the oil of oregano, how would I, give that to him?
Just a few drops, a couple of drops.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and it's available at any health food store. We're out of time. God bless. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Good night.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Ray calling here, and we've got Several people on the line already. That's a little unusual, but we're glad to have you. So our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Ray, how are you tonight?
Bob, great. But tonight I want to discuss satanic crimes in relation to the police and FBI reports that are coming out, and why the public has the right to know about these crimes and who's doing them and why they're being done, and why they keep on going on, because apparently the public is still in the dark about them.
Well, now, what crimes are you specifically speaking
of? Well, ritual crimes.
For instance,
the murder of a woman in the Stafford Chapel that happened, I don't know, maybe 20-some years ago, I remember that. They never disclosed to the public what exactly happened.
There have been lots of satanic crimes. We have a book on satanic crimes and a four CD set on satanic crimes, and we have certainly the book, The Diary of a Devil Hunter, things of that sort. Well, you have to understand, Ray, that there are forces, very powerful forces, in Washington, D.C., who do not want the American people to understand that this supernatural element is here, or that there really are satanic covens all across the United States. And when people have tried to bring this out, why, they've sent people out from the FBI to play this down, in other words, to degrade anybody. There was a book called Painted Black, as I remember, put a professor, I think it was in Colorado, and this professor talked about how the FBI had an organized program to disparage and attack and vilify anybody who talked about the very real satanic crimes and covens that are taking place in America today, because you have to understand that these satanic forces have infiltrated the highest levels of our society. There is part of the military that is actually working on trying to contact the other dimension and use the power that is there for a military purpose. In fact, we even have a fictionalized movie on that called Deceived, I think, with Lou Gossett Jr., but there's question that this is very real. I've even seen evidence, and I've I haven't actually met them personally, but I met the wife of a general who was involved in this program for the military. And certainly, there have been people in the military involved in these satanic covens, and they're being covered up by people with a great deal of power.
Yeah. The other thing, too, was that apparently, at the Nuremberg trials, the judges did their best to cover up the truly occult nature of the Third Reich.
That's right. That's covered in a book called Spiritual Politics, and it's a very, very important book. They did cover it up. Hold on there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Rafe, calling from Santa Cruz, and we're just asking why there's such an effort to cover up the existence of satanic crimes. And I said simply, very, very simply, that there are people at the highest levels of our government who are involved in Satanism, and this is covered in a book called Painted Black. It's covered in a book called Satanic Crimes, which we do carry. We don't carry Painted Black, and then in a book called The Diary of a Devil Hunter, which is the story of a gentleman who was involved in Satanism and then came out and tried to warn police forces. And as soon as he would be there, why, there'd be the fellow sent out from the FBI. And his job was to play down the influence of Satanism in America. Now, why would that be? Well, because J. Edgar Hoover was a 33rd degree Mason, probably at a much higher level than that. And of course, the last thing these people want is for people to understand the Luciferian nature of what's going on today. And we find this all throughout the world. Why do our churches not necessarily talk about the supernatural, its very real influence on what's going on in the world today? Well, very simply because they've infiltrated our seminaries and covered that up. And, of course, they've infiltrated the... Mm-hmm. And I know you're Catholic, but they've infiltrated the...
Oh, yes, they have.
Vatican Church.
And that's covered with Malachi Martin's discussions. It's very disturbing to me that that people, I'm sure that many people know that the existence of these crimes and why they're happening. I'm sure there are people, but they're actively promoting witchcraft and that sort of thing on the television.
Right.
So that's another dimension of this.
Because that's what Harry Potter was all about.
Yeah, Harry Potter.
When we found some of our major Protestant ministries pushing Harry Potter because it got children reading, and it was so important for them to read, you wonder what could motivate the leaders of these Christian groups.
Mm-hmm.
I share your concern, Ray. It's not imaginary. It's very real. We are involved in a spiritual battle. And I wish all of our ministries and our conservative groups would get this information out, but they're just not doing it.
Oh, they won't. I guess they...
Well, our job is to do what we can and pray for God's protection, because, believe me, there are powerful spiritual forces who are trying to conceal the existence of what's going on. In fact, they're... And I've forgotten whether it was a book by C.S. Lewis or perhaps one of the others, Taylor Caldwell, but the fictional dialogue between two devils, and one of them said, you know, when we can finally convince them we don't exist, at that point we know we will have won.
That's what
they've done.
They've done that.
Amen. Anything else?
Yeah, the NSA, you had a discussion before about the NSA being involved in this mind control, this horrible mind control experiments. Now, is there any way that they can remotely affect a person that way, by hypnotism or whatever?
Oh, definitely. Of course they can.
They can actually
create Manchurian candidates. And we have a couple of books by Jim Keith, who died under very strange circumstances, mass control and mind control.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we've got a DVD, I think it's called Monarch. It goes into this. We carry a book of the CIA doctors, written by them. It used to be Operation Bluebird, but it went into, of course, to these CIA and NSA programs, primarily CIA programs of mind control, and created dissociative personalities and split personalities, and you could actually trigger the responses from these people, just like the Manchurian candidate.
And apparently Dr. Mengele was over here in this country for a while, according to what we've talked about before. I don't know.
I talked to three people, or at least I've talked to two people who said that they saw Mengele here, and then a third person, the doctor who wrote the book, the CIA doctors, which we do carry, said he's talked to people who said that they had known Mengele. Of course, Mengele was allowed to escape from Germany to South America. He was part of the Rat Line, sort of a subsidiary of Operation Paperclip after the Second World War, where MI6, CIA, or initially the OSS and then the CIA, and then, of course, a certain element within the Vatican, helped the Nazis escape to South America. And about 10,000 of the most vile, including Mengele, went down there.
Yeah.
And then I think probably Mengele came back up here to work on these mind control programs. Right.
So they're still working on this. And you know, the other thing too is that what's really frightening is that the political candidates, you know, we don't know how to what extent they're brainwashed. I mean,
we really don't.
Scientifically speaking, I mean, these people can get into your mind, I guess. It's really mind-boggling.
But Ray, don't get discouraged. Put your faith in the Lord. That's all we can do,
yeah,
and then help us
do.
Get the word out. Hey,
yeah,
let's know we got a full board here, but thanks so much for calling. God bless. And that was Ray calling. And now let's go to John, who's calling from Vancouver, Canada. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Have you called before?
Yes, I have.
All right.
Sort of like the question is sort of related, actually. And I had heard earlier, some days ago in the week, that this new type of biometric technology that is being implanted in elderly. And as I thought about it, I thought this was something new under the sun, but in fact, if you're willing to trace it down to the pages of history, it actually is nothing new about it. And in fact, they found a silicon chip in a skull in Egypt that was about 4,000 years old. And batteries are nothing new. They date back thousands of years. In fact, my theory is computers have been around for many thousands of years, and they were introduced by these fallen beings called the Nephilim. And I think the only reason they have spaceships is because they were driven to it because of the flood, because when Noah's building It took him 120 years to build the Ark, but it only took them probably way less than that to build spaceships to get out of there.
Well, I sort of doubt that they really had computers back in those days, but certainly I think that a lot of the technology that we have may very well have come from this supernatural. Certainly we know that Thomas Edison used to go into these fits of meditation. Thomas Edison, for our listeners out there, was a theosophist. He was deeply involved in the occult. And he would go into meditation, they would come up with these ideas electronically, and apparently Tesla was as well. And then, of course, then we find that so much of the knowledge it has, the hidden knowledge that is being developed today, we're told in the Bible that in the latter days there'd be an explosion of knowledge, and there really is an explosion of knowledge today. So now you look back, 2,000 years, how could it ever have been that you'd get to a point where you could neither buy nor sell, issue wear the mark of the beast or be known by the number of his name? 2,000 years ago, that sounded like a crazy thing. What, of course, it was revealed to John the Divine and put into the Revelation. But it's not that absurd today, is it, John?
No.
Okay, fine. Anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I just want that. Basically, that was probably the question is this new biochip that they're putting in the elderly? Now, have you heard about that? And that's put against their will,
apparently. Well, we've heard that they've talked about putting it in the elderly, whether they've actually put them in. We've heard that they have put them into some people experimentally. We just do not know. We do know, of course, that they're putting the chips into animals, and, of course, many of the animals are developing sarcomas. They certainly have talked about the necessity of putting them into newborn children and into Alzheimer's patients, but whether this is really being done, I cannot say. I think that they would like to. I think that eventually they would like every American to have a chip. In fact, Tommy Thompson, who is formerly the head of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, Governor Thompson, when he left office, went to work for the people who make the VeriChip. And the VeriChip is a smart chip. You see, the RFID is a dumb chip. You need a scanner. The RFID is a smart chip, and it can be certainly tracked from space. Okay? Anything else?
Well, is it true that the U.S. servicemen are having chips put in their neck?
We've heard rumors of it. I do not have any documentation on it. I wouldn't be surprised. They use our troops all the time for experimentation, but maybe you could track that down and find out if it's really true. But we have to be so accurate. We don't want to put something out that we cannot verify. Hey, thanks so much for calling, John.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Daniel, who's calling from San Antonio, and once again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, Dr. Stan. This is Daniel in San Antonio.
Right, good to hear from you.
Good. I've been paying attention to you, as you know, for many years, and God's really been blessing me because I've been taking your advice. And I have a question for you. I go to church very often, and I have a lot of Christian brothers and sisters, and they're very nice brothers and sisters. But the one problem is when we get to Luke chapter 12, when I talk to my brothers and tell them, you know, in case of a catastrophe of some kind or the other, like the prophecy tells us, maybe we should store some food or something, and almost all of them always tell me, doesn't it say in the book of Luke, chapter 12, and seek ye not what you shall eat or what you shall drink? And they tell me all kinds of scriptures like that.
Well, the things that do, Daniel, is ask them, well, do you have life insurance? Well, of course, probably they do have life insurance. Why would you have that? You know, won't God provide for your family if you die? Do you have fire insurance on your house? Do you carry health insurance? Well, if you carry those things, why wouldn't you perhaps begin to plan for some sort of a catastrophe where you'd need food? You've got to point out the inconsistency of what they're saying. And unfortunately, there are forces within the Christian church today are telling everybody, you don't have anything to worry. You're going to get raptured out of here before anything bad happens. And that's just what they told the German Christians, you know, before the Second World War. You got nothing to worry about. You know, the Lord's coming any time, and you're going to get raptured out of here. The Lord would never let anything bad happen to Christians. Well, that's why the churches over in Germany are empty today, and I just hope that's not the reason that soon one day all of our churches will be empty as well. You can't convince them at all. If you can get him to listen to our programs, Daniel, maybe I can convince him. But don't get discouraged. Your job is to tell them the truth. Whether they listen or not is, of course, up to the Lord. Hold on. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Again, our number, 1-888-24 Liberty. Okay, Dan, you have anything else you want to say?
Well, but what does that scripture mean to you, though, when it says, "Seek ye not what ye shall eat"? What was Jesus trying to explain to us there?
Well, of course, what is the context in which it's given?
They maybe quote
the scriptures, but overall, what is he actually talking about? Is he talking to his apostles?
Yes.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the apostles were a very, very special group, and they were being looked after very closely by the Lord. But certainly, if this is true, then why did so many people in Germany die of starvation after the war, after the First World War, and after the Second World War? They were predominantly Christians who died there. And, of course, why did so many Christians die in the concentration camps in Germany? I mean, there were 12 million others besides the Jews who died in the concentration camps. Ask them the questions. And you'll do far better by asking questions than you will by trying to lecture them. Because people want to lean on something that gives them the feeling that they don't have to be concerned, and you can't make them concerned. But hopefully some of them will begin to realize the wisdom of what you're saying. And remember, of course, if Jesus was talking to his disciples, then you'd have to give me the exact reference and we could look into it. But, you know, certainly the disciples were on their special dispensation from God, and he did provide for them. But, of course, he doesn't provide for everybody in the world. If they did, why has there been great famines in with 6 or 7 million people dying in the Ukraine back in the late 1920s, early 1930s, or the Great Famine in China, where between 41 and 43 million people died between 1958 and 1962. I bet those people wish they had some food on hand, don't you?
Yes.
All right, fine. So just ask them, you know, why these things have happened. Why they bother to take out health and life and fire insurance if they have nothing to worry about.
Okay?
Anything
Thank
else?
You, Dr. Daniel? No, that's good. Keep up the good work.
We'll do the best we can. Well, my telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Mike calling in from Ottawa, Canada. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. It's good to talk to you again.
Good to have you back.
How
are things up there? Are they pretty cold up there in Canada?
Oh, yes. We've got an incredible amount of snow here this winter. It's just been unreal. We've really snowed in here for the last couple of days.
Well, how can that be when we have global warming and certainly the ice caps are melting and soon our cities are going to be inundated by this deluge of water from the melting ice cap?
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's the largest snow cover, I think, in decades that we've got in North America. That's what they were saying. There's more snow on the ground.
Well, of course, what they've done is they've stopped talking about global warming. Now they talk about climate change. And, of course, it's the CO2 that's producing the climate change, the global cooling. And you go back 25 years, and Al Gore was one of that group who was warning the people about the danger of global cooling. And is it just as phony as his effort to warn us about global warming? We have cycles of warming and cooling on Earth. We always have. It's as long as the Earth has been here. And we know that 1,000 years ago, we were in a period of global warming. And, of course, that's when Greenland was green. They were growing grapes in Greenland. And they were growing grapes in northern England. And certainly the weather was entirely different at that time. Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And it's Open Line Wednesday, so if you have something to say or a question, give us a call. But Mike, go right ahead. We have Mike calling us from Ottawa, Canada, telling us that they've got more snow up there than they've had for a long time. And we were just talking about global warming, but you had a subject you wanted to talk about, so what is it, Mike?
Well, I'll agree with you that I think environmentalism is a perfect satanic religion because they believe in hatred of of humanity. So, I mean, isn't it perfect with every death, every satanic death that they have is in service of their great environment? But, you know, the interesting thing is I've been thinking about your caller about satanic crimes earlier got me thinking about some stuff I've uncovered recently. Regarding John Lennon, the death of John Lennon, shooting of John Lennon back in 1980 was considered possibly a Manchurian candidate. David Chapman gunned him down in front of his home in Manhattan, on the west side of Manhattan, or the Dakota. That was considered possibly a CIA hit. And the justification for that was because John Lennon was becoming too much of a powerful voice for peace. So he was knocked off by the military-industrial establishment. What's interesting is that John Lennon was signed by David Geffen on a comeback album. It was a collaboration album with his wife Yoko Ono called Double Fantasy. He was signed to that label just before he was murdered, and David Geffen made his fortune on the resulting sales of that album. And then he signed Kurt Cobain to his label just prior to Cobain's death. And there's some speculation that Cobain was also killed under odd circumstances. And the same thing happened. As soon as Cobain died, the sales of his record under the Geffen label just went through the roof. It went triple platinum of both the records that they made signed to that label.
Now, have you ever seen the videos or the DVDs we carry called "They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll" that go under John Lennon and the fact that he was deeply involved in Satanism and the occult?
Oh yes, I mean he was wrapped up with the whole LSD hippie cult CIA drug. This drug culture has been created, in my opinion, by the CIA. What's interesting is there's so many parallels between Cobain and the death of John Lennon and the death of Kurt Cobain. When you look at it, here's what happened: is John Lennon teamed up with Yoko Ono to put out Double Fantasy. Yoko Ono was famous for being a gold digger and also really obsessed with becoming famous and becoming a musician. Everybody around her always encouraged her to try to outshine her husband. And she became famous on that record after his death. And here's an interesting thing, is Cobain was married to Courtney Love, who was an aspiring musician. He collaborated with her on her band's second record called Live Through This. And that record was released 4 days after his death. It was her band's second record. There's speculation that he helped write some of the music for that record, and he even sang background vocals on that record. So you have an identical situation where you have an aspiring musician wife with a dead rock star husband, both in the situation of Yoko Ono and Courtney Love.
Well, I think that certainly it is an interesting similarity, but I think behind all of this are the very satanic forces that really do exist, and many of the leading musicians and people within the rock business have sold their souls to the devil intentionally. Yes. And for our listeners out there, if you've never seen Joe Schimmel's DVD, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, you really need to. People really do make a deal with the devil today. In fact, that's really the basis of everything that goes on today. There is power out there. There is success. There's fame. There's all the sexual gratification and drugs you want to. All you got to do is make a deal. And believe me, these people make a deal, and of course, but eventually comes the time when they have to pay off. And the devil calls them home. Certainly, John Lennon was deeply involved with the occult. If you've ever seen the album, Sgt. Pepper, you'll actually see they have a picture of Aleister Crowley there. Aleister Crowley, who is known as the other Loch Ness monster, because he lived on Loch Ness. Aleister Crowley was a Satanist, and certainly he readily admitted to that. He called himself the most evil man in the world. And why was John Lennon paying certainly include Aleister Crowley's picture on their album, Sergeant Pepper. Hey, we're going to have to run, but thanks so much for calling, Mike.
Can you hold me over for the next drink?
Go ahead.
Okay. I had another interesting revelation.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Mike. Do you have something else you want to say?
Yes, I uncovered another interesting revelation regarding this same topic. Is that, I'm losing my train of thought because of all the confusion. I'm drawing a complete blank.
Fine,
I can't believe this. I've been waiting for 5 minutes to state this. What was it? It was about Courtney Love and Cobain.
Okay, here's what it is.
I've remembered finally. Okay. Cobain was a huge fan of William Burroughs, the author William Burroughs. He considered him his protege. William Burroughs was a heroin-addicted beatnik author who wrote about homosexuality. He was homosexual. He was a heroin addict. He's famous for actually having shot his wife in the head at a party in Mexico. And he got away with it because it was in Mexico, and his friends said that it was an accident, that he had tried to shoot an apple off her head in a drunken game. So he got off scot-free. Now, Kurt Cobain was obsessed with him. Kurt Cobain did a music project of him, William Burroughs, reading a story with Kurt Cobain doing background music for it, right? This was just 6 months prior to Kurt Cobain's death. Then after he died, Courtney Love starred as Burroughs' murdered wife in a movie called Beat. It was based on the Beatnik writers' movement, and it was about Burroughs. It was an autobiographical movie about William Burroughs, and she played his murdered wife in that movie.
Well, I'll tell you what, because you don't want to get mixed up with these satanic forces, because when you do, eventually, sooner or later, you're going to have to pay. But thanks so much for calling, Mike, and let's go to David, who's calling from Wisconsin. Hi, David. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Nice to speak with you. I have a question I'd like to ask you. There's a doctor I know that has one of his sons is autistic, and I wanted to give him some information on that, and I was wondering if I would be wise to go with, is it Dr. Geyer?
Well, yes, but I think that probably, if you're going to give him information, I'd suggest Dr. David Ayoub's talk.
That one, okay.
Because it comes along with a CD-ROM that has literally thousands of pages of scientific data on the toxic effects of mercury. And they know that. They know it, and they're still, of course, putting mercury in the vaccines.
Okay, well, what I was also hoping to know...
Hold that thought for just a minute. We're going to bring our other stations on board, and we'll keep you on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is Open Line Wednesday. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. We have David from Wisconsin, and David was saying that he knows a doctor who's one of his children is autistic and wanted to know what he could possibly give that doctor that would perhaps help him. And, of course, first of all, we have to convince the doctor that there is a very real connection between mercury and autism. And I was suggesting the talk recorded here at a conference a couple of years ago by Dr. David Ayoub, and it's called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. And the advantage to that is when you get the DVD, you get along with it a CD-ROM that has literally thousands of pages of scientific data, which will verify the fact that they know that the mercury is toxic, and they're giving it to our children anyway. And for us, you read the press. I was reading something the other day, and they were saying why there are 5 studies that show that this is perfectly safe. And of course, Dr. Ayoub analyzes those 5 studies. One of them was done on a group of people who had, I think, meningitis. All of them died. But they were all given the thimerosal, the poisons that's within our vaccines, and But because they didn't die of thimerosal, that it meant that they were perfectly safe. And you say, that's crazy talk. Well, what's going on today is really crazy talk. So, Dave, that's certainly one of the best places to talk now. Certainly, if the doctor's interested and he wants to do something for his child, well, how old is the child? Do you have any idea?
I think he's about 19.
No, he's really far too old for a lot of the what they're doing. Of course, they're suppressing the testosterone in the children and then chelating them. But the child still might benefit from chelation.
Well, that's what I was wondering. And I was wondering, I was actually thinking about maybe both of those. You know, the one by Geyer and the one by Aub.
Right.
Would that be, do you think that would be a good idea? Or
I would start with Aub, and if you give people too much, if you get their interest, why, then, of course, I'd give one of my audio-taped interviews, one of my last audio-taped interviews with Dr. Geyer, and then we could even put this physician in touch with Dr. Geyer. He's given me by permission to put out his telephone number. I wouldn't put it out over the air, but certainly for a family that had an autistic child, I'm sure he'd be glad to talk to them. A child at 19, you know, you're really worried, but you ought to get them chelated. Sometimes hyperbaric oxygen can help the children in that category. But what you really want to do is try to decrease their violence, because some of these children at that age, young men, are just terribly violent and almost impossible to take care of. Is that the case with this boy, do you know?
I really don't know, but I suspect it's caused much problem in the, well, I think he's separated from his wife, and I wouldn't be surprised if that had something to do with it. I don't know that.
Well, that happens so often. If you actually read the book Evidence of Harm by David Kirby, which just tells about the tragedy that befalls the families with autistic children, so many of them are separated or divorced because of the autistic children. Because, of course, there are many people who say, just put them into some sort of an institution and go on with your life, and either the husband or the wife can't go along with it. But it's totally disruptive as far as a normal family life is concerned. But why don't you see if you can get the doctor to watch Dr. David Aub and tell him there is hope for the child, but at least begin to explore this. And then, of course, from there, you get back in touch with us, and we'll tell you what to do next.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr.
You're welcome. Good night. God bless you. And this is really one of the terrible, terrible tragedies of our time, is the fact that they know at the CDC the danger of thimerosal, and they're lying to the American people. Why? Because if they told the American people the truth, we wouldn't trust them anymore. And they, of course, have strong ties to the vaccine industry. And they were talking about billions of dollars in profits. And, of course, there's the other element of really wanting to do harm to children. There really are people who want to do harm to children. There really are people who believe there are too many people in the world and they want to kill off 4/5 or 9/10 of the world's population. And if you doubt that, you only need to go to Elberton, Georgia, to see the Georgia Guidestones there, where, of course, they're in 8 different languages. On the Great Stone Monument is the caption, number one, maintain the population of the earth at 500 million in constant balance with nature. And since we have over 6 billion people on the earth, if we're going to get back to 500 million, we're going to have to kill off over 90%. And this same figure has been used over and over again. You'll see reference to that in my talk. And it's available up on the internet. It's called it's a little pamphlet. It's called the Population Control Agenda. You can pull it down, and you need to get that information and help us to get the truth out. So our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let's go to Phil. And Phil is listening in Ontario as well. You're listening on both shortwave and internet?
Well, right now I'm listening on shortwave.
Okay, fine. How is it coming in on that shortwave?
It's coming in pretty good. Sometimes it's as clear as a local AM radio station. Other times it's kind of staticky.
Well,
it's pretty good.
Well, you know, we actually have two frequencies there. We have 5.835 and 7.315, but the end of this month, on the 31st of March, we're changing over, and the new frequencies will be 5.8 6.75, that's 5.875 and 6.110. And I wish we could have it for the 2 hours, but I'm glad we've got 1 hour, and it's pretty good most of the time.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question. I'm not quite sure if this is on topic for what's been discussed tonight. But
we don't have a topic. You can ask anything you want to.
Well, here we go. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned that when you were stationed in Germany in the military after the war, you met a number of Christians who lost their faith because they believed in the rapture and that they would be taken out before the Great Tribulation. I was just wondering, did these people lose their faith entirely?
Well, certainly they were very, very disillusioned by what they'd been told by their ministers, and so they faced such horror there. I mean, when you saw Mainz, when you saw Munich, when you saw Cologne, I mean, these cities were just totally destroyed. Munich wasn't so bad, but Mainz, where I was stationed, and Cologne were just really nothing but rubble. And of course, there and in Germany, and of course, I didn't discuss this at the time. I wasn't smart enough, but certainly Erwin Lutzer brings this out in his book Hitler's Cross, and Erwin Lutzer is the senior pastor at the Moody Church in Chicago. But in that book, Hitler's Cross, he talks about how they were preaching Romans 13 at that time too, and they used the ministers to keep the people in line. And then of course there's the other idea that, you know, the Hitler was the Antichrist, nothing bad was going to happen to them, they were all going to get raptured away, and it destroyed their faith. And really the churches in most of Europe are fairly well empty, the Protestant churches, and the Catholic churches aren't that much better. I mean, they pretty well destroyed Christianity in Europe, and they're doing everything they can to infiltrate our churches here in the United States today, and the occult forces working within the Catholic and the Protestant churches are just devastating.
Do you believe that those churches that believe in the rapture reflect this occult influence upon them?
Well, I certainly believe that the rapture is being used to neutralize good people, and certainly some of my best friends believe in the rapture, and I don't know. I would hope and pray there would be a pre-tribulation rapture, or certainly a mid-tribulation rapture, and we wouldn't have to go through the terrible suffering. But where in the Bible does it say that the rapture will come before America as a nation is destroyed? And what happens if the rapture comes 30 or 50 years after America has been destroyed, and you know, after your children have been either slaughtered or enslaved? And so this is the approach that I use, because to many people, the pre-tribulation rapture is almost an article of faith, and yet, of course, it's relatively new. It didn't come about until the mid-1800s, and then it was pushed by a small group of very, very convincing people. And today, some of the finest leaders in our church believe in the pre-tribulation rapture, but there's no place they can guarantee it's going to happen before America or Canada are destroyed. Yes. So I think that they're misleading people and giving them a false sense of a hope, and so they really don't have to be involved today. I think the pre-tribulation rapture preaching has neutralized so many people. Now, there's certain people like Chuck Missler, a personal friend, who certainly keeps telling Christians they have to be involved, even though he believes in the pre-tribulation rapture. I try to avoid this issue entirely, because I think it's so divisive to the body of Christ.
Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
All right, fine. Well, good to talk to you. Let's go to Roger from Allentown, and once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and you can talk about whatever you'd like to talk about, and you can disagree with me if you'd like to. That's what Open Lines is all about. So again, the number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and we've got Roger calling from Allentown. How are you doing, Roger?
Oh, fine. Thanks, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to pass this on to you. You probably already heard where Dr. Dean Adel came out again the second time in as many weeks, perhaps, working off a comment from McCain about, you know, John McCain entering the autism wars, offering up his scientific opinion that there's strong evidence that autism's got to do with a preservative in a vaccine. Well, Mr. Almost President, there's no preservatives in vaccines. They haven't been there for, what is it now, 7 years, right?
Well, of course, he's not telling the truth. Obviously, yeah. Dr. Adel does not know that there is still thimerosal in the influenza vaccine, which are given to, by recommended giving to pregnant women in the first trimester and given to children at 6 months of age. So obviously Dr. Adele really does know what he's talking about. I will have to admit I was very pleased to see that John McCain on this issue was absolutely right. And the other thing that I was pleased to say, and I'm not a John McCain supporter at all, but when he was asked recently on 60 Minutes if waterboarding was torture, he said, of course it is. And then they said, well, why then is the Bush administration pushing this? And McCain's response was, I think that they've somehow lost their way. And I'm not saying this in support of John McCain, but I will have to admit I agreed with him on both issues.
Well, it's something how this Dr. Dean Adele can come off as trying to be a profoundly authoritative when he's, I guess, profoundly ignorant. That would be a best case reading, I guess. And then he says, of course, he would change from a couple weeks back where he said, why, one European study even shows that that when they removed the thimerosal, the cases of autism has gone up. Now that's been changed now to just a few days ago to reported cases of autism has been rising since thimerosal was removed from vaccines.
Now, Chris, so, you have to really go into the background of that study. So, that was a study, I've forgotten, it was done at Denmark or Holland or one of those countries. I'm not in a position to comment on it, but what really happened is they were comparing apples and oranges, and of course, after they took the thimerosal out, they began to change the definition of autism, and they began to count all sorts of others that had never before been counted. I think before they were only counted the cases in hospitals, and suddenly they're counting all the children in the entire country. So certainly we could talk to Dr. Geyer on that, or certainly Dr. Ayub or the others who've really analyzed that. And of course, the fact that Dr. Odell would actually utilize that suggests to me that he has either been paid off or he just doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, my point was just that his interpretation gets richer in just a matter of a few days.
But I think we have to understand that he's on a lot of stations. He would not be on a lot of stations and getting a big fat salary if he was telling the truth. I think he's probably, like Rush Limbaugh, one of the finest commentators that money could buy. And of course, Adele is really very entertaining. But of course, she doesn't always tell the truth. We always try to tell the truth. And if we make a mistake, we're willing to come on the air and say, hey, we goofed on that.
Well, he's not all that entertaining, really, nor, I don't think, informative. He is on certain general medical items. But let it be said that he's yet to find a vitamin he could not belittle nor an abortion he could not love.
Well, let's put the one thing in that is, of course, that he's never practiced medicine. Hey, God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Jolene, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, Jolene. How are you doing?
Good. This is the first time I've heard your program, and so I just thought I would call in. And I have a comment in response to your earlier caller that was talking about John Lennon and Kurt Cobain.
All right. Hey, go ahead.
I think his name was Mike or something.
Right, he was Mike from Ontario.
Okay. Well, I wanted to read a scripture from Philippians 4:8.
All right.
That's okay. And it says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. And I wanted to, and I don't know where he's at with his spirituality, but it seemed like he's like seeking truth. And, you know, the devil is crafty, and we don't need to think upon like the things that he does, because it'll just go around in circles in our brain. So I just wanted to really encourage him to seek the truth in the Bible. And
Do you think that we should address the Luciferian forces that are working in our society today?
Well, I've gone that route, and I've had, like, you know, a lot of, you know, conspiracy type thoughts, and I know that stuff goes on, but the only way that I address it is I pray against it.
All right, I think that's fine, Jolene, but I believe we need some leadership there that will point out we're involved in a political, in a spiritual battle that's being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And the problem is that we have so many Christians that know the Bible so well, and yet, of course, they are not involved in the spiritual battle to survive, to preserve our society. I hope you'll just keep listening to our program, because we do deal with the spiritual aspect of everything that's going on. But thank you so very much for calling, and thank you for bringing the scripture for it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye, and let's go to Ed calling from Utica, New York. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good to hear all the comments from different callers. It's favorite time on Wednesday night.
Well, I always enjoy it, too.
This is something that I just received. I don't know if you're familiar with the American Policy Center.
Yes, I am.
Tom DeWeese.
Right, Tom's a good friend.
Okay, I just wondered what you thought about supporting that particular aspect to try to get the Christians together. And, I guess it would be over the Internet mostly.
Well, I think that we need to get the Christians working. I don't want a central organization, because when we have one, it'll be taken over by the other side, and I've seen this happen over and over again. But I do believe that we need to communicate and get the information out far and wide, and I think Tom does a great job, and we certainly support what he does.
Okay, well, that's all I had to ask. Just thought, you know, there are so many issues, there are so many people that are asking for money, and you don't know whether to trust the organization or not, because I think there's a lot of these people that are out there for just to make money.
Hold that thought. We'll be back with you in just a moment here.
Okay.
After Radio Liberty. Well, Ed from Utica is on the line, and I agree with you, Ed. I think that a lot of these organizations are just trying to funnel off money so there won't be money for the people who are really doing a good job, but I think Tom DeWeese is doing a fine job, and I certainly support him.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. In studying the Constitution, I had been perplexed about statements in the 13th and 14th Amendments, such as subject to the jurisdiction thereof relative to citizenship, and then in the 14th Amendment, section 4, the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned. And I thought that was kind of strange until I read in Bob Plimpton's You Were Born Free, Now You Can Live Free, the fact that the United States Corporation was bankrupted in 1933. And since that time, all consumer debt is actually fraudulent because of the practices of the bankers and the government in utilizing people's property. When it says subject to the jurisdiction thereof, they have to voluntarily, because the 13th Amendment excludes involuntary servitude. So voluntary servitude, by recording one's property deed, for instance, or a birth certificate or a marriage license, it creates a third-party nexus with the bankrupted municipal corporation, which then...
Jack, how are you going to prove that you own your property? How are you going to prove in court you own your property if you don't have a deed for it? You know, I know Bob Plimpton, and I know this, what Bob was doing. We spent a fair amount of time with Bob, but you have to realize that we live in a society. We may not like the way things are. We may not agree with it. They may very well have corrupted our Constitution, but at least for the time being, we have to exist in this. So tell me, how are you going to prove in court that you own property at all? Or maybe you're suggesting we shouldn't own property because we would be making, of course, some sort of agreement with this corrupt system.
Well, no. According to corporate trust law, of full disclosure, good faith, valuable consideration, clean hands, it's even constitutional relative to the taking of private property for public use without just compensation. Well, according to corporate trust law principles, whenever one does record their private land deed, they are supposed to be informed, fully informed.
But they're not. When you record that deed, have you ever done it? Have they ever fully informed you? Hey, we're out of time, but God bless. Always
good
to hear from you. Thanks very much. Here, we'll be back in just a moment with Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris says, I hope you enjoy our Open Line Wednesdays. We always enjoy them. Opportunity to share all sorts of ideas with you. And then, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us And Sydney, we've had to cut back from 2 hours shortwave in the evenings to 1 hour, but at least we've got good stations, and of course we'd love to have both hours in the evening on shortwave, both hours in the afternoon on shortwave, and certainly with our internet and stations we purchase time on across America, we are able to get the truth out. So if you'd like to, in your position to help Radio Liberty, I would like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I'd like to tell you, Sydney, about some of the new items we put together. We have a new DVD. It's called The Planned Police State. And there really are people in America who have put everything in place for martial law, and all they need is to create another feigned attack. Remember the Gulf of Tonkin attack that got us into the Vietnam War? It was all fraudulent. Remember the attack on the battleship Maine back in 1898? Well, you don't remember, but you probably read about it. It was totally fraudulent. And they get us into wars time and time again by creating incidents. In fact, there's some questions. Some people question what really happened on September 11th. And Osama bin Laden's involvement with the September 11th, 2001 attack, and we suggest you go to the FBI page on your internet, go Google FBI, Osama bin Laden, 10 most wanted men, and you find out that the FBI, although they have Osama bin Laden listed there as one of the 10 most wanted men in the world, they do not mention the September 11th attack. Well, that's why we went to war in Afghanistan, isn't it? To catch Osama bin Laden. The government said that they had proof he was involved, but I guess the FBI doesn't know about that. But look it up. Check it out and see if it's really true. Could it be that they would create another incident like what happened on September 11th to justify a military dictatorship? I suggest you seriously consider getting our DVD on the planned police state. And then, of course, we're carrying a new book. It's the story of the murder of Martin Luther King, which you've never heard about, the trial that was held, where, of course, the jury found that the government was primarily responsible for the murder of Martin Luther King. The book is called An Act of State. How could you cover up the murder of an American hero like Martin Luther King? Well, you control the media, and you must understand the media in the United States is controlled, which is why I do what I do. We have a great 4 tapes out on Alzheimer's disease. So this is a condition that's increasing rapidly. You're being lied to about its cause. Our 4-tape set, our 4-CD set, will give you information you won't get elsewhere. We have a great 4-tape set on the Bilderbergers, one of those secret occult organizations that dominates America today. We actually have a 4-tape, a 4-CD set. We have 2 books. One is called The Bilderberger, as the other is called Bilderberger Diary, and then we have an excellent DVD put out by our good friend Alex Jones. It's called Endgame. It goes into the Bilderbergers and their plan for depopulating the Earth. In other words, killing off most of the world's population. We've got a great new 4-tape set on spy chips. If you'd like to know about the weather, we have a book on weather modification, a DVD on weather modification, and a great 4-tape or 4-CD set on weather modification. You're going to get things at Radio Liberty you won't get elsewhere. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like more information on the subjects we've mentioned, or go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you'll find access to the DVDs we've created. You can actually watch them there for nothing. You can listen to our programs for nothing. You can pull down our newsletters. We hope that you'll do that, and we hope that you'll want to support Radio Liberty. But if you can't, at least tell others about our program and encourage them to listen. And understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And of course, our job is to let people understand what's going on. And then, of course, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and, of course, the views of our guests. And for the next hour, our guest is going to be Patrick Wood. From the August Review. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Well, I understand that you recently put on a seminar on finances, and you had almost a standing room only crowd.
Well, actually, it turned out that way. It was down in Arizona, and we were expecting quite a few people. We brought a number of chairs out, and we just ran out of space, and there was people had to stand in the back of the room, and they did until the very end, almost 3.5 hours.
Well, I think it really shows that there are people who are interested in what's happening financially now, and of course everybody should be concerned because we are entering a financial meltdown, a financial Armageddon, a collapse of the whole world monetary system, a fraudulent system imposed upon us by very powerful forces over which we have little or no control. But of course we're all caught up in this because we all have worked and saved during our lives to accumulate wealth for our retirement, and that wealth is endangered. So why don't you pick up and tell us the story, your interpretation of what's going on today, and what people can do to protect themselves?
Well, globalization, is, as you know, Dr. Stan, is my area of chosen area of study. But when it comes to studying the economic order that's being imposed on the globe right now in the world, the issue of finances very quickly comes into view, and because of my financial background in many years past, actually since college days, I have somewhat of an interest, at least an amateur interest in these things. I'm not a professional economist, but I'm pretty well versed in the things of investments. And what's happening in the world today is this is the very first that this has ever happened in the history of the world. The world economy has been glued together or stitched together because of the activities of the global bankers and the global elite when they set out to create the new international world order, of course, way back several decades ago. Now the global economy is tied together. Credit has risen and fallen together. Stock markets are rising and falling together. Commodities are rising and falling together, and so on. And today what's happening in the economy is the house of cards built by credit, the expansion of credit in the last 15 to 20 years, this entire structure is just imploding upon itself. It's caving in. And it's not just an American thing. This is one of my most important messages I need to make to people, is it's not just in America, in the United States, that we're hurting financially. This is happening all around the world today. All the markets in the world are moving together. And we're feeling the severe pain of it here. You know, we've got a lot more to go, I believe, as the credit instruments and so on, like the subprime market industry, continues to collapse. Hedge funds are biting the dust. There was just another one bit the dust today in Wall Street. Banks are in jeopardy of closing their doors right now in America. There's some 65 or 68 banks right now that are on the FDIC's watch list, their close watch list, which is the ones that many of those banks are just sitting on the edge waiting to go belly up. Of course, the Fed won't, or the FDIC won't tell us who those banks are, but they still tell us there's 68 banks right now, or five, that are on the close watch list. And so there's going to be a huge shakeout in the banking industry in our country, unfortunately, and it'll leave the big banks like the Chases and the B of A's and the Wells Fargo. They'll virtually dominate the scene.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, I guess it's Patrick Wood. But Patrick, you know, Bank of America, certainly Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, certainly Bear Stearns, Merrill Lynch, all of these major financial houses are having a very difficult time as well. Do you think that they're too big to go down? In other words, the government will step in and finance them and let the little banks go down while the big boys who created most of the problem and written the derivatives and bundle these loans are going to get off scot-free?
Well, that's exactly right, and I think that's what's I think that's what's in view right now. Even as the Federal Reserve just announced yesterday that they're going to make another $200 billion available to shore up the banking industry.
But where's the money coming from? I mean,
it comes out of thin air, Dr. Stan. Essentially, as you know, that when the Federal Reserve lends money. They don't have a reserve requirement themselves. They can just create the money. But the thing is, Federal Reserve, being a commercial bank, when they say we're going to put up $200 billion, they're not giving that money to the member banks. They're loaning it to them, and loans must be repaid. And all they're doing with this kind of a package is simply buying time for the big banks to restructure. Now, the little banks, I don't think, are going to have the ability to restructure in a lot of cases, and they will fall by the wayside. But when the big banks run into a brick wall and they need time to arrange for financing or capital injection from the outside, having $200 billion at short term hand is a good thing. It's a very good thing for them.
And Chris, really what was so interesting, I was reading the Wall Street Journal today, and just very little tiny print there, unless you read the article very carefully, you wouldn't get it. The Fed is beginning to loan massive amounts of money to the European central banks and to the central banks of Europe.
Absolutely.
I mean, why in heaven's name are we lending money to the central banks of Europe?
Well, it's not we loaning money. It's the private Federal Reserve loaning money to them.
I think that's what's so important to understand, is the Federal Reserve is not a branch of government, contrary to everything we believe. It's a privately owned central bank that works for the benefit of the privately owned central bank and not for the benefit of the American people. But we can't let the folks know that, can we?
Well, no, and there's only a couple of central banks in the entire world that are not privately owned, and that means most of them, of course, are. The great majority of them are, and what we've seen in the last several years is that these central banks have come more and more underneath the control of the Bank for International Settlements, which is based in Basel, Switzerland.
Hold that, though. We'll be right back in just a moment with Patrick Wood here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Patrick Wood of the August Review, and certainly Patrick is saying that there are a number of banks, about 65 of them, that certainly here in the United States that are on the verge of collapse. The government won't tell us which ones they are, but the Sydney Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Federal Reserve System, has said that these banks are probably going to go down, the smaller banks. And, of course, they're not going to let the larger banks go down. They're going to keep creating money out of nothing, destroying the value of our currency, but to preserve the larger banks. But this is a worldwide process. Certainly, we know that the United States Federal Reserve Bank, and it's really the privately owned central bank, is now creating not only $200 billion to loan out here in America, but also countless billions of dollars to loan to the central banks of Europe and to the European central banks. And, of course, the more money you create, the more inflation you create, because inflation is simply an increase in the money supply. And that's why the dollar has decreased from about 130 on the index compared with other basket currencies down to about 73 today, and is on the way down to about 50 in relationship. And with that, of course, comes the destruction of the value of our currency. And you pick up the story there.
Well, wow. I was the global banking system, the bottom line on this, I think, is the global banking system has become more and more congealed together as this crisis has unfolded. And we see the Bank for International Settlements now taking a very strong hand in setting global banking policy amongst all the central banks of the world. And they're starting to act more and more in concert with each other. This was not the case 20, 25 years ago. But today we're starting to see the cross-pollinization between central banks, indicating that there's been some kind of an agreement or some kind of a cooperation, if you will, amongst the various central banks of the world to get into trouble and that need short-term some short-term funding or whatever to get out of a pinch. But it's important to remember that banks are in business to loan money, not to invest capital. Banks don't invest capital, they loan money. And so all the money that is put on the block for loaning from our Federal Reserve to any bank, that money has to be repaid again with interest, and soon. These repo agreements typically don't last any longer than about 30 days. At the outside, some of them are short as just 2 and 3 days. So it gives the banks time to sell their better assets to raise cash to pay back the loans. That's all it's doing. It's just buying them time. It's not improving their financial condition one whit. But the bigger banks have resources to pull on, to draw from. Like, for instance, Citicorp got a huge capital investment from Dubai last month. And it was $8 billion. It's pocket change probably for the king of Dubai, but still, they arranged for that capital injection, and there's been others come into other big banks from different countries around the world as well.
And, of course, what they're trying to do is keep the banking system afloat. And the last thing they would want, especially these foreign countries that have about $3 trillion in American dollars, the last thing they would want was for the economic system to collapse. They'd end up with a lot of useless paper. Because, of course, it's all built upon faith. There's nothing behind any of the currencies anywhere in the world.
That's exactly right. Right now, all the currencies of the world are paper. I think we're going to see that. I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to see that change in the next 5 to 10 years. But right now, the paper currencies in the world are just, they're virtually disintegrating the economic system.
Well, because our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, asked for your telephone number. He wanted to relay some information to you. Did he call you about the fact that there is evidence that a lot of the American gold has been sold overseas to Rockefeller interests who have been apparently amassing massive amounts of American gold overseas?
Well, yes, Dr. Stan. I did talk to Dr. Cuddy. And I ordered one of the books that he recommended to me. It was written by an author by the name of Bill Still back in the 90s.
Right.
And there will be some important references in there as to what happened to the American gold. But on the other hand, I remember, and I think you remember also, there was a gentleman back in the 70s and 80s from Ohio, who spent the balance of his life after he retired, a very wealthy industrialist, and he tried to force the government, his name was Ed Durrell, he tried to force the government to perform an audit on Fort Knox. And there's never been a full audit on Fort Knox ever, and he was unable to get an audit. But there's only speculation, really, about how much gold truly remains in our hands in Fort Knox. There is some physical gold there. But that doesn't mean that it's ours. And there was quite a bit of evidence that he accumulated that most of the gold was transferred to the New York Federal Reserve branch somewhere back in the 50s and 60s. And that's about all we know. We know that the gold went somewhere, but what caught my ear and caught Dr. Cuddy's ear was that they discovered in the bank, in the vaults at the Bank of England, that some of the gold bricks were cracking. And pure gold, 9.999% pure, those gold bricks don't crack, they don't tarnish, they don't wear. But they were experiencing cracking in the gold bricks, and they were very concerned. There was a very small article in the British press about it. And it caught my eye, and what it told me was, it's not pure gold. Duh. I mean, so it's not gold, is it, dummies? And the only non-pure gold that we have in the world in recent history, like in the last 200 years, is all the gold that was confiscated by FDR and melted down into gold bricks. They look the same size, but coins are not made out of pure 99% gold. They have other alloys in it as well. And so all the coin melt gold was melted down and stuck in Fort Knox. That was supposed to be our national treasury. Our national asset. And so we know that a good portion of that coin melt gold ended up somehow in the vaults in England.
And we have to ask how that happened. And of course, if you, any of our listeners out there who would like information from the Federal Reserve on where the gold is, why we have a syllabus that goes with my talk on the financial tsunami. And there, of course, you'll see the report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York saying that down in one of the sub-basements, they have massive amounts of gold there. And, of course, they have it from six different countries. And, of course, many times you'll hear that England has sold off, you know, 20 tons or 200 tons of gold, but it's simply not picked up and thrown over somebody's shoulder to take home to put in the basement. They simply move it around from one pile there in the sub-basement of the Federal Reserve to another one, and that's where an awful lot of the gold, certainly from all the countries of the world, is right there in New York City.
Well, that's very likely that it is, and the underground storage where gold is kept is merely separated by wire fences inside these vaults, and they use electric forklifts to move gold from one pen to the other. And of course, just the fact of having the physical gold there, again, it doesn't tell you who owns that gold.
Right.
Unless you could go in and go pen by pen and write down how many gold bars there are in each pen, you would never know who owns the gold.
Well, they're going to an awful lot of effort to convince us there's gold at Fort Knox, but nobody's allowed to go in and... But they will come forward with some military officers and said, I've been there, I've seen it, trust me. But why won't they let the people see it? Well, I think that the answer is very clear.
It's self-evident. Right. They don't want you to know.
They don't know what's
been sold out from under our nose.
And, of course, what they have done is they've got us to go along with this totally paper money system. Now they can create all the paper money they want, and in the process end up impoverishing our people. Well, certainly, Patrick, you go ahead and tell our listeners what's happening and what does the future hold and what should they be doing.
Well, Dr. Stan, I've been studying some of the writings of the gentleman that, the economist that was the principal architect of the euro currency in Europe. And he's been writing recently about creating a global currency that would be called the DEY, D-E-Y. I think it merits further study by other economists as well right now, because what he's proposing is taking a basket of currencies, the dollar, the euro, and the yen, and that's the acronym that forms the word DEY, D-E-Y. And it's slated to be an interim currency, but the point is to stop the instability in the currency markets, to give something to the Arab world, the oil-producing world, to denominate, they won't be petrodollars, it'll be petrodays now, I suppose. But there's a further plan, Dr. Stan, this is a key thing, there's a further plan in this man's writing to include gold as a peg in that currency basket sometime in the future. And there's no date on this yet. But it tells me that these people have not believed their own lie, which we knew was a lie, that gold has no monetary value. And gold is still highly regarded by these people. My guess is that the gold has moved out of public hands into private hands. And the people who have the gold today, whoever they are out there, whether it be Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, or whoever has that gold, is planning on trotting it out at some point again, bringing it back into the currency system, and again they will have lockstep control over the currency, whatever currency that they devise at that point.
That's the old golden rule, you know, he who has the gold rules.
That's exactly right.
All right, our guest is Patrick Wood. The world is plunging into economic chaos. The average individual can't quite see it yet, as long as he has his job. But of course, more and more people are losing their homes, and it's not just the subprime loan people. It's people with the Alt A loans, and even some people with, who really, of course, were quite well qualified to buy their homes, bought their homes, but now with the falling price of homes, their home is worth less than the mortgage that they have on it. And of course, as prices continue falling and people stop buying homes, why, the prices are going to fall even further and further. And we're looking at a financial Armageddon, and you better be prepared. We'll be right back. Well, Patrick, if you disagree with anything I say, don't feel bashful. You go ahead and put your, because we want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I guess we probably do agree on quite a bit, Dr. Stan. Just kind of a humorous story. I got a phone call today from a friend of my wife's, actually, up here where I live in Idaho, and this friend called the house phone. I thought it was a contractor, and so I picked up the phone, thinking it was somebody else, and she introduced herself, and I said, oh, yes, I know who you are exactly, and whatever, and she said, well, you won't believe this, but the other day, this one of my clients came in, and she gave me this cassette tape, and she says, well, you've just got to listen to this. You just have to listen to this. And she said, okay, so she listened to it. She called me up on the phone. She says, you know who was on the tape? It was you. And I said, well, where on earth, I mean, where would I be on a tape? Was it a radio show or something? And she tried to get it out because she didn't know your name. I said, well, this is Stan, doctor or someone. I said, oh, you must mean Dr. Stan. And sure enough, somebody had taken your cassette and given it to this lady, and she recognized that it was me on the interview. And anyway, she had a couple of questions for me, so I talked to her for a few minutes. But it's a small world. All I can say is,
well, of course, that's really what we do. We do a program like this, and it's sort of like dropping a pebble into a quiet pond, and you begin to see those ripples going out, and you never know where they're going to end.
That's right. And but one part of the thing that tickles me about this is it demonstrates to me that the financial crisis that's happening right now is an absolute lightning rod issue to Americans all across our country.
Well, the fact that you could get 150 people out to your talk there in Arizona, or New Mexico, wherever it was, I think is great. And it really reflects the fact that people are interested in, if they'll listen to you on this, perhaps they'll listen to you on some of the other things that, certainly because you've been studying this international and globalist movement for a long period of time, and maybe they begin to connect the dots and see that this whole thing is being engineered to destroy their wealth, and of course increase the wealth of the ruling elite.
Yes, exactly. Probably one more comment on gold at this point I think would be worth mentioning. That there's been quite a number of people that have looked at the institutional gold sales by the federal, the reserve banks and so on, the IMF and so on, as an effort to suppress the price of gold over the decades and stuff. And although there may be some truth to that, you need to remember that one of these gold bricks that weigh 400 ounces each, for instance, right now is worth $400,000 a brick. That's just one little brick that is no bigger than the speaker, the computer speaker on your PC. And a $400,000 brick, single brick, your neighbor down the street doesn't buy one of these things and take them home, as you mentioned. Central banks don't buy it because they're sellers. They've been net sellers. And the IMF and the World Bank don't buy it because they've been net sellers. So the question is, who's been buying these 400-ounce bars of gold? And the obvious answer has to be it's somebody in the private world. And who in the private world has $400,000 of brick to throw around to accumulate? We're talking about palletfuls of gold when they sell gold from like the Federal Reserve or wherever.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Patrick. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess is Patrick Wood, and so Patrick is raising the question: when the central banks or the IMF or whoever it is sells gold, because they sell these bricks of gold, it's one worth about $400,000 a brick. And of course, when you've got palletfuls of these, you're dealing with perhaps 20 tons of gold that one of the central banks will sell off. And the question is, well, who, has enough money to buy those bricks? Certainly, is it going to be another central bank? Who has, $1 billion to put up to buy the gold? It's not something that the fellow down the street's going to be doing. So pick up the story and tell us, who is buying the gold? Somebody's buying it.
Well, it has to be private individuals at this point. And what one expert suggested to me one time, actually it was a guy I talked to from England, he said, well, all the gold that's being sold by these big institutions is going into things like jewelry, and you know, I said, give me a break. Who's gonna convert that kind of gold into jewelry in this world when jewelry is the demand for jewelry is soft anyway? There's not that many wedding rings in America, for instance, to even put a dent in it. So it has to be private hands. Who has the funny money in the world that's interested in gold? Well, people in India have traditionally been very sensitive to gold with its monetary value. In the Mideast, the same way. The Arabs have been awash with greenbacks for decades, and they love gold. The rich banking families and so on, the big trusts, foundations and trusts and so on that would see financial trouble coming, that's another place that gold could be tucked away and nobody would know the difference. But whatever the case is, it's not the institutions of the world that are acquiring gold. It's not the banks. The central banks wouldn't sell gold to their own member banks. That would be dumb. And they're certainly not selling it to private citizens like you and I. You could ask everybody you know for the next 20 years, and you wouldn't find anybody that owns a 400-ounce gold brick. It just doesn't happen. So it's out there somewhere. The physical gold is out there somewhere. And I'm also reminded, I'm sure, that we see a picture, for those who are interested in Bible prophecy, we see a picture towards the end of Revelation that buying and selling with the merchants that roam the sea, buying and selling is done in gold. It's not done in currency at that point. It's a very clear reference in the Bible to the fact that gold will again rise to its preeminence as a global currency, not backed by gold, but gold itself. So we may see this trend start really soon. I don't think the dollar can be counted out completely in the short run. And I can see gold coming back into the monetary system sometime, maybe even in the next 5 or 10 years.
And I really think that this is exactly what they plan to do. In fact, there was this wonderful article, I know you're acquainted with it, it occurred in Foreign Affairs magazine within the last year, talking about the solution to the problem, monetary problem, and that would be to issue a privately issued currency backed by gold. In other words, a privately issued currency backed by gold, which would become the currency for the entire world. Now, you have to understand that the real purpose behind everything going on in the world today is to bring about a world government. And you can't have a world government if you've got all these sovereign countries, each with their own currency. If we're going to have a world government, we're going to have a global currency. But the interesting thing to me, and I'd like your thoughts on this, Patrick, was that they were talking about this would be a gold-backed, privately issued, in other words, by some people, not by government, but privately issued gold currency that would be the standard for the world. What did that bring to your mind when you read that?
Well, privately held, back in 1972, Zbigniew Brzezinski made the comment that banks and international banks and corporations were acting in well in advance of governments and government entities, and to create the direction of the world economic system. And what he had in mind even back then was that many government institutions would be moved into private hands. The decision-making process would also be moved into private hands, and we've seen this generally happen ever since then. And so today, if we have a monetary system that's in private hands, even outside of the, for instance, the Federal Reserve Bank here and the other central banks in the world, that means that a very few number of people will control the entire global system.
And of course, whoever controls the money controls the political system as well. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Patrick Wood as we explore really what's happening monetarily, because this is going to influence everybody out there in the listening audience. And of course, our plea to you is begin making preparations. Understand we're moving into a financial meltdown, and prepare yourself to try to survive. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Patrick, go right ahead.
Well, we've talked about the credit meltdown. It also ought to be noted. We talk a little bit about oil as well. Oil crossed $110 a barrel for the very first time. Is spiking upwards at just a completely unbelievable rate. And in the midst of that, our president gives a speech the other day that says, well, we just have to break energy dependence on the Mideast and so on. He suggested alternative energy sources like ethanol and so on, which is just such a joke that the oil prices are being manipulated today by the same people who are trying to gouge us on the monetary system as well. And this is something, again, as part of the global economy, the new international economic order that was envisioned back in 1973. And it's an absolute outrage that people don't understand it. It's bad enough they're sticking us, but it's even worse that people don't understand the complete shallowness of the explanations they're giving on why gold, oil is going up. I almost said gold. It's just, they call it black gold. It's for a reason. We have to note, for instance, the hypocrisy of it. Our government right now has the power to unlock anywhere between 3.5 billion barrels of oil and as many as 16 billion barrels of oil in Alaska. And they could do this with a stroke of legislation that would put those oil reserves up there for drilling, and we could be completely independent with our own resources within just probably 10 years, if we would only drill the oil that's been locked up by the same government, I might add. There hasn't been a refinery built in our country in 30 years, Dr. Stan, because of all the regulations and stuff. They shut them down. We need to build refineries to refine our own oil. If we wanted to get off of dependence from the Middle East oil and Venezuela and so on, Mexico, we could do it, and we could thumb our nose at them 100% if only our own administration would simply manage our own national treasure in a responsible way. We'd be off at a meal in a minute. So, it becomes obvious when you realize what resources we have that are not being used, that they have no intent of getting America off dependence of foreign oil, because they're running us straight for the brick wall, and we're headed right into that brick wall.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Patrick was saying, and I certainly agree with him, that the president says, oh, we've got to get to a position where we're not dependent upon foreign oil, and oh boy, we're going to have we got great programs. We're going to develop solar energy and wind energy and ethanol, and oh, this is going to give us independence, and it's all ridiculous. They're giving the impression they're doing something, and they're not doing anything at all, just as they're giving you the impression they're trying to do something about the economic crisis, and they're not doing anything at all. And I would simply point out, who financed the environmental movement that's blocked the drilling for oil? Who has blocked the environmental movement that's blocked the building of new refineries? And of course, it's the oil companies. Why would they do something like that? Why, very, very simply, because we have about 5 major oil companies in the world today. And I would simply ask you a question: do they make more money when there's an abundance of oil, or when there's a shortage of oil? Well, if there's an abundance of oil, the price comes down. If there's a shortage of oil and gasoline, why, the price goes up. And is it any wonder at all, of course, that the Exxon and Chevron oil companies are both Rockefeller controlled, that Royal Dutch Shell is controlled by the royal family of the Netherlands, and of course that the British Petroleum at least is largely controlled by the British royal family, and these are the royal families, of course, who are ruling the world in part through their agents. But people, of course, can't believe one. Why would the oil companies want to restrict the drilling for oil? I mean, they'd make all that money. No, they make more money not drilling for oil, creating artificial shortages. When are the American people going to wake up? Well, before we go on, Patrick, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and your ministry and about your webpage and what you do there at the August Review.
Well, certainly I will. Our website is www.augustreview.com. And we are a center that that offers a critique on globalization and the global elite. We write quite a bit about the elitist organization called the Trilateral Commission, which we've discussed several times on other programs over a period of time. And as you know, I started studying the Trilateral Commission back in the 1970s, in the late 1970s, with Professor Anthony Sutton. And we wrote books and newsletters and did a lot of speaking and so on back in those days on the Trilateral Commission, in the early days of the Trilateral Commission. And so I'm picking up that work that was started back then and continuing on it. You know, fast forward 35 years later, here we are. It's a scary thing, but they've done exactly what they said they were going to do.
All right, now, what about the webpage? How will they get your webpage?
By going to augustreview.com.
Okay, and what about a telephone number? Is there a telephone number you want to put on?
Well, actually, I'd prefer people just go to the website. There's a contact form on the website. If they want to get a hold of me, they can they can click on that link and get the information, or they can just drop me an email.
All right, fine. And just now, basically, what should people be doing to prepare for what lies ahead?
Well, you know, I don't want to start a bank panic or anything, but I kind of think people should kind of be running for the hills right now. I personally think they should that they should be converting any illiquid assets, including stocks and bonds and real estate, whatever, anything that they can, to get out of debt and put whatever is left over into cash equivalent investments, like very short term treasury bills, 30 to 60 days, 90 days at the maximum. You don't want bonds, you don't want commercial paper, you don't want long term treasuries like 10 year treasury bills. Where notes, short-term cash equivalent treasuries are absolutely the safest thing, I believe, right now in the world. The dollar, indeed, is setting new lows, but I think that very likely there's going to be a reversal sometime soon. These kinds of spikes they don't last forever. But there's a lot of wisdom in owning some portion of gold, because gold will never go to zero. There's never going to be a time in history where gold will be worth nothing. And but on the other hand, with gold price so high right now, I wouldn't be too anxious to run in and put all your money in gold, because you could be very disappointed if you had 100% of it in gold right now and it goes down $200 or $300 an ounce. But wisdom says that cash will be king. I believe that we're entering into a deflationary period right now, not an inflationary period, and I differ with this with some people for sure, but I pretty strongly believe that we're more likely to see deflation before this recession / depression is over than inflation, and that's going to be more harmful to our country than an inflationary depression, I might add.
Well, is it possible that we will have inflation before we have deflation, or do you feel
In some things we will. For instance, the price of oil is going up, but it's not because of supply and demand. It's because the market is being manipulated. It's a sanctioned market. The price of many commodities are going up in sympathy with that. For instance, the wheat, the corn market, the soybean market, and so on, has been spiking upwards. But that's because the oil companies are messing with the agriculture system, and these grains are being used for non-food items. So plus energy costs are going up. So it's kind of hard, really, to peg. Is it really happening because of monetary inflation, or because of monopolistic inflation of prices? And I think some of the big monopolies, they may, in the end, some of them may fall apart, some may not. But when a credit implosion happens, like what we're seeing on a global scale right now, when a credit implosion happens, inflation cannot be the outcome. It just can't be. Numerically, it can't be the outcome. A deflating credit bubble reduces the supply of money available in the world to chase goods and services and stocks and real estate, you name it, whatever's out there for sale. And that's one reason, for instance, we see house prices going down across our country. That's why we see stock prices going down, bond prices going down. So the inflation is not that we've seen right now, the symptoms of it, it's not completely consistent with the rest of the picture.
Well, now, for many, many years, the United States has been exporting its inflation. In other words, it's been sending massive amounts of money to other countries. Had we kept it here, it would have produced real inflation over the last 25, 30 years. But we've exported our inflation. And as long as, of course, the countries throughout the rest of the world hang on to our currency, this won't influence it. But what happens if we were to lose the reserve status of our dollar and a large segment of that $3 trillion in money and credit was suddenly to flood back into this country? Would that have any impact on our on the inflation or deflation status of our society?
Here's what's happening with that money that has been exported to the Mideast and to China, for instance. That money is coming back in the form of sovereign funds, buying up assets in our country, buying up companies, buying up real estate. They're using the money in the country of origin. Like, for instance, you wouldn't go pay dollars to buy real estate in Germany. You got dollars, you come to America and buy real estate. You come to America and you buy companies. You come to America and invest $10 billion in Citicorp. So what we see is our national assets are on the auction block, literally, to the dollars that are being held overseas. And basically, it's a smorgasbord for these people, Dr. Stan. They're coming in here nearly, they're not coming in here and going to Walmart on a shopping spree and driving up prices of, toilet paper. They're coming in here, they're buying up our cherry assets that, that we've built over 200 years now, 250 years of existence. They're taking these wonderful companies that used to be American companies, they're buying them up, and the profits from those companies now, hard as we might work here, the profits that are generated by those companies go overseas, and they make a return on their investment. This is where this money, this is what's happening to the money that's being held overseas. And you watch a newspaper, you'll find that, every day in the Wall Street Journal, somebody from outside our country has bought some company within the United States or invested in it.
And we've not only, of course, sent a lot of our manufacturing overseas, but about 25% of our domestic industry has been purchased by foreign companies and foreign countries. Westinghouse. What could be more American than Westinghouse? The only trouble is Westinghouse is no longer American.
That's exactly right.
And of course, if you get our syllabus on the financial tsunami, we simply list all of the American companies that are now owned by foreigners, about 25% of them, and that was, of course, about a year and a half ago, and I share your concern, Patrick. I think that they're going to be a financial tsunami, is simply buying up our companies. The money's going to be here, but that's going to expand the money in circulation, which we, of course, upon which we depend, M1, M2, and why did they quit publishing M3, which had been publishing for 100 years? Why did they suddenly quit publishing, or I shouldn't say 100 years, maybe 50 years anyway, but why would the Federal Reserve System say that we can't publish M3 any longer, it's just too hard to compile?
Well, they certainly wanted to mask what was really going on with the currency and, available credit or actually used credit in the monetary system. And there's two ways to look at that, though, Dr. Stan. We did have a spike for a time. But one thing that M3 would have shown as credit has started to contract around the world, it would have shown a radical contraction as well, which would have been a forewarning that the Fed had tightened policy to the point where credit started to collapse. And it would have given most everybody a warning that the skullduggery was going on within the Fed. Let me give you an example. In 1929, when the stock market crashed, the crash is now, the fact that it crashed is laid at the feet of the bankers at that time who withdrew credit from the stock market. And because investors could buy stocks on 90% margin, they put up $100, they could buy $1,000 worth of stock. Well, when they on borrowed money, as long as stock's going up, everybody made money. But the banks then pulled the credit out from under the investors and forced them to sell their shares. And so the first big wave of selling dropped the stock market down by several percentage points, forcing further margin calls, which forced further sellings. And once that spiral began, the stock market went down like a rock. Well, there was this, there never should have been a bubble in the first place, for sure. But the bankers knew what they were doing as they injected credit into the market to get it into a manic state. When it got to the top of that, they pulled the rug out from under the credit market and let it collapse. And as it collapsed, it brought about a situation where those big banks at the time, they knew what was coming. They positioned themselves for it. They made millions and billions of dollars out of the whole depression at our expense. It was a complete travesty of justice or whatever, but it was a horrible situation in our history. And this is exactly, Dr. Stan, I believe, what they're, and Bernanke's comments to the contrary, by the way, this is what I see the Fed is doing to us right now.
In fact, it was really very interesting. There's something called Carlyle Capital. It's one of the large hedge funds associated with Carlyle Corporation,
yes.
One of the biggest and most predatory of our international organizations. But Carlyle Capital had about $600 million in assets, but they went out and borrowed money based upon their assets, and they leveraged that up to over $20 or $21 billion in all of these bonds that they were getting, collateralized debt obligations and asset-backed securities, and $21 billion based upon assets of about $600 million, just say $600 million. And then, of course, when the value of the assets that they had, which were used to back the capital to justify their loans, began to fall, why, of course, the banks began to call in those loans, and they didn't have any money. They had to begin selling their assets at a reduced cost, and so the value of so many of the bonds that they held, they almost had to sell at wholesale prices to get the money to meet the margin requirements, they were getting. So this is really happening to our hedge funds all across America, isn't it? They're getting the squeeze, and instead of the stock market people getting squeezed, it's the hedge funds and the people who have invested, countless millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars, or I think well over $1.5 trillion in the hedge funds.
Well, it's absolutely true. There's going to be a lot more hedge funds that go out, but everybody's getting squeezed at the same time. There's banks that are on the ropes right now. There's insurance companies that are on the rope right now because not only are there heavy investment positions, but because many of these large insurance companies actually wrote policies to insure the financial instruments that the banks were selling that are, to investors around the world that are now defunct. So the insurance industry hasn't even, they're showing cracks, but they haven't shown many announcements yet. It's coming. Just wait. So you've got banks, insurance companies, hedge funds. You've got international investment bankers like the Goldman Sachs of the world and so on I should take Goldman Sachs out of it. They're making out like a bandit right now. But the rest of them are all hurting at the same time. When it comes to Goldman Sachs, one needs to remember that our current Secretary of the Treasury was Henry Paulson, was the chairman of Goldman Sachs before he accepted the position, and he accepted the position after our president took resignation from Treasury Secretary John Snow, and I made the comment at the time that. Why would you need to change horses in the middle of a stream when nothing was going on? And we look now, I asked the question again, why was Hank Paulson brought in to be Secretary of Treasury right before this financial crisis hit the fan? And I think the answer to that is going to be very obvious in the next year as Goldman Sachs continues to make record profits while everybody else falls apart around them. It would seem like Paulson is presiding over this financial crisis. He's certainly not doing anything to solve it.
You're absolutely right. And, of course, we see Merrill Lynch really on the ropes, one of the large ones. We see Morgan Stanley, and I don't know how Chase Manhattan is doing, but or J.P. Morgan Chase is doing. But so many of our major financial houses, Bear Stearns, they're already on the verge of bankruptcy. I really believe if the government weren't standing behind them, they'd go under. But I think they're just too large to fail. I think that they they would not dare let those go down, at least as long as we're able to continue printing money with nothing behind it.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so go ahead, right ahead.
We've got the foxes watching the hen house right now. In any case, and that doesn't bode too well for us right now. We know in the presidential election so far that it looks like Obama and McCain will be going head to head this fall, and both of them, as we already know, are heavily backed by members of the Trilateral Commission. And in Obama's case, he's very closely being backed intellectually and as an advisor by Zbigniew Brzezinski himself.
Right. The man who actually created the Trilateral Commission.
That's exactly right. And another interesting fact there about Obama, he also got a very enthusiastic endorsement from your old friend Paul Volcker, who was appointed chairman as the Federal Reserve under Jimmy Carter.
Well, we'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up the program with Patrick Wood. Patrick, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and of course, isn't that fascinating that Paul Volcker would be endorsing Obama? Obama certainly doesn't understand anything about finance, but I'll tell you what, Paul Volcker does.
Oh, yes, he does. And it's interesting, Paul Volcker has never in his career given a political endorsement to a presidential candidate. He never has. He's a Democrat personally, but he's never given an endorsement until today with Obama. And you know, it just tells you where the money's flowing and what, you know, what's going on. I mean, it's just outrageous. But there's no help on the horizon with either Obama or with McCain. McCain also being backed by big money and the Trilateral Commission people as well. You know, right now people just need to be sensible about their own position, Dr. Stan, and they need to take heed to the warning signs on the horizon. There's storm clouds brewing everywhere we look right now, and you know, the smart person will see danger and will take evasive action.
And of course the thing is that if you do not prepare, my fear is that an awful lot of our listeners are going to lose everything they have. Certainly, we had a call on our first hour from a young man from San Antonio, Texas, who had actually listened, taken our advice a couple of years ago, and has done very, very well. He moved from the Silicon Valley down to San Antonio, Texas, has a beautiful home there, has investments in precious metals, and of course he's positioned himself for this. Now, of course, there's going to be, I think, going to be terrible suffering. I do not know all the things that are going to happen, but I do know that the people who are in debt today, or who are not modifying their way of life, getting out from under their car debt, their home debt, their other debts, they're going to very readily be wiped out before this is over. Would you agree with that, Patrick?
I absolutely would, Dr. Stan. And, you know, if it happens, it happens to the extent it does, but it's never too late to do what you can with what you have at that time. People need to remember that. If you think you're doomed, if you think you just, you know, you're going to be wiped out, you know, be of some good cheer, because wherever you find yourself that day, that's where you are. You need to deal with you as you are that day and do what you can to protect yourself and your family that day. And don't worry about what you could have done had you started earlier. That only produces inaction.
And I think that what we have to do is look at where things are, decide what we're going to do, and then go ahead and do with it. And Sydney, let's get your website out just one more time.
AugustReview.com. It's www.augustreview.com. We'd love to have anybody come. There's no charge for being on our website. Everything is offered free. You can support us if you'd like, but this message is too important to put under the cloak of a subscription or whatever. So
we're out of time. Hold on.
Thank you, Dr.
Stan. Well, my guest has been Patrick Wood. Thank you, Patrick. It's been a real pleasure having you with us, as always. Good night. All right, fine. Well, that was Patrick Wood. Hope you enjoyed our conversation with him. And, of course, if you would like to, of course, more information on what's going on, we do have a talk called The Financial Tsunami, and the syllabus that goes with that we think is important to have. Then, of course, there is the pamphlet on financial meltdown. Another pamphlet, quite inexpensive, certainly on the history of money. We carry, and we have it fortunately back in print, Ed Griffin's wonderful book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is the story of the Federal Reserve System, the privately owned central bank that controls your destiny. The Creature from Jekyll Island is must reading. It's the finest book we have available. We actually sometimes on a weekend will put out as many as 20 or 25 copies on our Amazon bookstore. So understand that people all over the world are reading this book and acknowledge its value. We carry the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Anthony Sutton, who is a personal friend. The book Fiat Money Inflation in France, written almost 100 years ago by the Dean Sidney of major university in the East, and of course it was telling about what happened in France in 1789 when they adopted a fiat money system similar to what we have today. All of the items, Financial Tsunami, the video, the DVD, the syllabus, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the pamphlets, The Financial Meltdown, or The History of Money, and then, of course, the books, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, or The Fiat Money and Trade in France, written by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the dean of Cornell University 100 years ago. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like more information. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we want to mention our new DVD on the planned police state, our new four-tape or four-CD set on Alzheimer's disease. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there's so many people out there who do not understand the danger of Alzheimer's disease. Is growing rapidly, and there's really no good source of information on what caused this or what you need to do to protect your loved ones. And there are treatments. At least they'll stop the progression. Again, the DVD is also, pardon me, the four-tape set is Alzheimer's disease. We, of course, have, if you want to know about weather modification and how there is a plan to modify the weather and they have the ability, we have a four-tape set. We have a book on weather modification. And then we have an excellent DVD put out by our good friend Bob Fletcher on weather modification. And then, of course, we have, Sydney, our new four-tape set on the Bilderbergers. And, of course, we have two books on the Bilderbergers and the Bilderberger Diaries. And then, of course, we have DVD put out by Alex Jones called Endgame. And then, as far as the satanic nature of the Bilderbergers, the book or the four-tape set, Satanic Crimes, four-tape, four-CD set, or get them both together. You need to have this information. You need to understand the sinister forces that are at work, because, of course, the Trilateral Commission is simply an extension of the Bilderbergers, as is the Council on Foreign Relations and the Club of Rome. They are all working together to create the one world order, the one world religion, and enthrone the one world leader. And, of course, to put this into its spiritual context, you need, of course, to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret, available on DVD, and there's a syllabus with that. What is the Forbidden Secret? Well, certainly you'll want to get the DVD and find out, because, of course, it could very well not only save your life, it could save your soul. Understand, of course, we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried out on a political, ideological, financial, economic battlefield, and most people don't even know that battle is going on. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for our leaders, our ministers. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.